from deep inside your radio.
And also from Dallas, Texas, ladies and gentlemen. Think of it. And as if to underline that startling fact, you know that if you've been a regular listener for some time to this broadcast, that this program has originated from a number of locales over the years. I have to say, though, in all honesty, this is the first public radio station or any kind of facility that the show has been broadcast from that has at the front door, in addition to the now pretty normal sign, this is a smoke-free facility, the additional very nicely printed plaque. This is a weapon-free facility. All right. I'm not going to get shot in here. That is such a comforting thought. Ladies and gentlemen, some news from the road. As you may or may not know, I'm traveling the country with Christopher Guest and Michael McKean and the Unwigged and Unplugged Tour, www.unwigged.com, for information. We'd love to see you in Florida this week. And the road is a wacky place. So last night, we were performing at a facility. I don't want to say it's the middle of nowhere, because that's insulting. Let me just say it's a lovely theater in what the signs proclaim to be the city of Grand Prairie. And there are at least two metaphors in that name, or exaggerations. And so, we weren't staying at a hotel in what you might call town. Instead, we were at this, what it is a golf resort, really. I mean, it's kind of a hotel surrounded by golf courses. Yeah. You know, it's a hotel that has the Ben Crenshaw suite and the Phil Mickelson suite, you know. So, and when you're touring, you take the bus after your gig, and then you arrive at the next facility, the next place where you're going to squat for a while, in the middle of the night. So we arrive at this golf resort at 3 in the morning. And I'm the first one off the bus because I want to get into a real bed. And the assistant manager plops me in a golf cart, appropriate, and we set off from the lobby for the quarter-mile trip to wherever the hell my room is. And it's 3:15 in the morning. It's dark. No lights on the golf cart. And we're trundling along until all of a sudden the cart stops. And I'm trying to figure out why the guy has stopped because we're nowhere near the room yet until I realize, icy, we're now soaking wet. He stopped because he's realized that the sprinklers are on. It's a golf course. And he's trying to figure out, should he go forward through the sprinklers or back up and go around the other way? It's the glamour, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, it's the luxury. Because I took advantage of the facility to say, hey, I'm going to be on stage Saturday night. Is there any way that you guys can record Game 7 of the Boston-Chicago NBA playoff game? Oh, yes, sir. We'll be delighted to. And we'll have it delivered to your room. Okay. And I don't even bother to ask what format it's going to be recorded in or how it's going to be delivered. I figure they'll figure it out. It's a golf resort. They must, you know, the businessmen who play golf as a vacation must have this kind of request. Oh, yes, sir, we've had this request. This isn't the first. So they deliver to my room, and I've been really good about not letting myself hear how the game came out. And they deliver to my room about midnight two VHS cassettes. And, of course, the only machine in the room besides the TV is a DVD player. It's the road. Hello, welcome to the show.
Quite the opposite, in fact. Eleanor Roosevelt knew not what to do. "This tie clashes with my hat," he cried. "Don't you think that's true?
From the edge, nowhere near the edge of America. From the not even near the third coast, from Dallas, Texas. Well, no metaphor necessary. Not even the city of Grand Prairie. This is Le Show. I'm your host, Harry Shearer. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this just in. Something's wrong in Pakistan. Yeah, go figure. The Pakistani government's inability to stem Taliban advances has forced the Obama administration to recalibrate its AFPAC strategy a month after unveiling it. Who could have imagined there'd be trouble in Pakistan? Who could possibly have had their... What was planned as a step-by-step process of greater military and economic engagement with Pakistan, as immediate attention focused on Afghanistan, has been rapidly overtaken, says the Washington Post, by the worsening situation on the ground. That's the worst place to be when things are going bad, ladies and gentlemen. Get in the air, quick. Nearly nonstop discussions over the past week included a White House meeting between Obama and senior national security officials. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is the interesting part to me, the particularly interesting part. Obama is going to host a tripartite summit this week with the Afghan president, Hamid Karzai, and the president of Pakistan. Now, I don't know if this is what happened the last time a Pakistani president, an elected Pakistani president, went abroad. But I know it's happened when a Pakistani president has gone abroad for, you know, a meeting. By the time he gets back, he's been overthrown by a military coup. Just, you know, if you want to place your bets, I think the tables are open. New consideration is being given to a long dormant proposal to allow U.S. counterinsurgency training for Pakistani troops somewhere outside Pakistan. We've been thinking about this for a while, you see, because Pakistan refuses to allow American boots on the ground in Pakistan because it's politically unpopular there, you see. Our friend won't allow our guys in there to train their troops because our friend doesn't think it's politically advisable for our guys to be. The issue now is, how do you do that? Where do you do it? And what money do we have to do it with as a senior administration official? Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, we got it all figured out. The administration is concerned, of course. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, returned from a trip to Pakistan, more concerned than I've ever seen him after any prior visit, said a Pentagon official. The word Mullen used was, quote, alarmed, unquote. This ain't no swine flu we're talking about here, ladies and gentlemen. It's a nuclear-armed Pakistan. "We're not saying the sky is falling," the official said, "but it's raining pretty hard in Pakistan." The level of concern began to rise 2 weeks ago when the Pakistani parliament passed that agreement to authorize Sharia Islamic law in the Swat Valley, expecting that that would calm down the Taliban, which instead started moving in force towards the capital of Islamabad. They're within 60 miles. And tensions are running high between the two governments in the advance of Obama's first meeting with the Prime Minister Zardawi. We see more duplicity than ambivalence about the fight against extremists, said a member of the administration. Well, welcome to the club, babe. More duplicity than ambivalence, i.e., when you read Pakistan killed 60 militants in a military attack on them, read, is it okay now, America? Can we go back to normal business? You happy? We killed them. We killed some. Other officials expressed skepticism the Pakistani offensive against militants would continue, as if to underline the point I just made. The test of all these Pakistani military operations, because we've seen them from time to time in the past, is always their sustainability, says the Pentagon spokesman. Nice way of saying, what happened? Where are they? Officials say they're still looking for Pakistan to begin moving large quantities of its half-million-strong military. That's right. Pakistan has an army 500,000 strong. Why, then, can they make no inroads against the insurgency, the Taliban, the creeping Talibanization of the country? Because all those troops are stationed on Pakistan's eastern border with India, which is the only thing Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen, really cares about, in case you thought they cared about us. Now, to the newsworthy part of the program this week, an on-the-spot report, actually, from a listener. Conrad writes, Dear Harry, I returned, I guess this would be early this week, Tuesday, from Mexico City, expecting delays at both airports, but I was surprised to find no extra screening, no more than on my last trip in February. In the Mexico City airport, I picked up a pamphlet with tick boxes asking if I had a fever, joint pains, muscle pains, cough, and a couple other categories, but not sore throat. I handed it to the woman at the ticket counter, but I can't say she looked at it, and she handed it back to me. After that, nothing more. Washing my hands in the nearest bathroom, I found that four sinks in heavy use shared the same soap dispenser. Moving through the airport, the ubiquitous blue masks were worn primarily by uniformed employees. Many were not affixed to mouth and nose, but were draped beneath the chin. Restaurants were open at the bar. A couple desserts sat on a dessert tray for at least the time it took me to drink and pay for my beer. Overall, fewer people wore the masks than on the city subways. On the plane, most masks came off mid-flight. The woman two seats over from me wore hers on her tray table, and she coughed throughout the flight into a single finger she held in front of her lips. At customs in Los Angeles, nobody asked me about my health or symptoms, just where I had been. I noticed the customs form only asked what countries I'd been in, but did not require more specific information. I noticed no swine flu task force, no CDC employees, no special screening, just a cop with a dog who sniffed among the bags, though presumably for something other than flu. This was Monday evening. I'm sure it's much better now. So that's our front line. But, you know, it's here now. Forget about it. You know, chickens die in this country, ladies and gentlemen, for many causes. And it's interesting to learn a new one, at least new to me. This is from an interview on CBS this week with Keith Lewis of the Miss California pageant. This is apropos of his revelation that the Miss California's breast enhancement, let's put it nicely, was arranged and paid for by the Miss California pageant. So the anchor asks, don't the judges look at proportion when they're judging the swimsuits? Wouldn't she have a better chance of winning if she were more proportioned? Keith Lewis says, well, of course she does. But there's plenty of ways of getting to more proportion without doing breast implants. He continues, many of the girls use chicken cutlets. The anchor asks, if you have a flat chest, what are you supposed to do? And Keith Lewis of the California Miss California pageant replies, you use chicken cutlets. You use tape. You use anything you can to enhance the line. There's lots of tricks of the trade. But the only one he mentions, aside from tape, is chicken cutlets. So a chicken died so that Miss California could have a better line. Ladies and gentlemen, the Karma train is pulling into the station. You may recall last summer when the attempt by the host of this broadcast to advertise the Grammy-losing record Songs of the Bushmen on a series of billboards in Chicago was nixed by the billboard company Clear Channel because the cover of the record was inappropriate. Clear Channel, revenues are plunging, and so is its cash flow, making it harder to meet the payments on the billions in debt accumulated in the process of buying out its public investors. If it violates some of its loan agreements, those interest payments rise sharply. The company is laying off another 590 employees after cutting 1,800 employees in January. Says one analyst with the odd name of Bishop Cheen. Yeah? He's a stock analyst. Bond analyst, actually. He says Clear Channel is on track to become the biggest default among media companies and therefore the biggest problem ever in the industry. The company's options may be limited. The Karma train, ladies and gentlemen, pulling right into the station as we speak. And now, news from outside the bubble. I bet you'd want that billboard money now. Here's a place to plan your next vacation from the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. The mass of plastic debris known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Come on, bring your swimsuit. Accumulates because of an oceanic gyre, a slowly circulating ring of currents. With low winds, relatively weak currents, and little land to wash up on, rubbish swept into the North Pacific gyre tends to remain there. So you can plan your trip now. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch consists of two main areas, the western, which stretches between Japan and Hawaii, and the eastern, between Hawaii and California, thought to be the most densely polluted. The patches are connected by a 6,000-mile current where plastic also accumulates. The UN estimates there are 18,000 pieces of plastic per square kilometer of ocean. In the North Pacific Gyre, the average density is much greater, an estimated 334,000 pieces per square kilometer. About 80% of the debris in the oceans is swept out from land. Thank you very much. With most of the rubbish thought to originate on the west coast of America and the east of Asia, where it's carried on the currents. The remaining 20% of the trash in the oceans is deposited when ships lose their cargo. Famous examples included shipment of Nike shoes in 1990 and tens of thousands of plastic ducks, which were lost in 1992. They weren't just a few bad apples after all, also from the Times of London. Prison guards jailed for abusing inmates at Abu Ghraib are planning to appeal against their convictions on the ground that recently released CIA torture memos prove they were scapegoats for the Bush administration. The photographs of Abu Ghraib abuse sparked worldwide outrage. Some of the guards who were convicted of abuse want to return to court and argue that the previous administration sanctioned the abuse but withheld that role from their trials. This occurs as it emerged from an ABC News report that the two psychologists hired by the CIA to craft the enhanced interrogation techniques, i.e. torture, were paid $1,000 a day to consult on the torture. And by the way, neither of them had ever participated in interrogations in their lives before. 12 guards at Abu Ghraib were convicted on charges related to the abuse, which included attaching electric leads to naked prisoners, terrifying them with dogs, beatings, and slamming them into walls, which we've now learned is called walling. The wall slamming was a technique authorized by Justice Department officials at the time. Charles Gittins, the lawyer who represents Charles Grainer, the ringleader of the guards, serving a 10-year sentence, said the memos proved his long-held contention that Grainer and the other defendants, including his former lover Linda England, could never have invented these tactics stress positions in the use of dogs on their own. Once the pictures came out, the senior officials involved in the decision-making knew. They knew they had to have a cover story. It was the Bad Apples, led by Charles Grainer. Giddens says the refusal by the Bush administration to acknowledge it had authorized such techniques during the trials of the prison guards and the judge's refusal to call senior officials to testify undermined their defenses. Grainer's case now will attempt to go to the Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces to argue the top Bush administration officials kept their complicity from the defense. Although, of course, relying on illegal opinions or orders would probably not be a defense. But you never know. Just a few bad apples, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what supporting the troops means. It means if you generate a policy and you don't really want to take credit for the toughness of your policy and it becomes public, just blame it on, you know, blame it on the troops. Oh, we're supporting you. We're supporting you. You're in jail, but we're supporting you. From the McClatchy newspapers, continuing news from outside the bubble. April was the bloodiest month for violence in Baghdad in more than a year. Another sign that Iraq's security gains are beginning to reverse. Just parenthetically, would this be possibly because the surge didn't really work? Remember in the election campaign when the Republicans kept saying, Mr. Obama, why won't you acknowledge that the surge worked? Well, maybe because it didn't, because what worked was paying off the Sunnis to stop running an insurgency for a while with the promise that the government would hire them into the armed forces. And now we've stopped paying them, and now the government isn't hiring them into the armed forces. And so, presto changeo, unsurge. President Obama, at his Wednesday news conference, returning to the McClatchy papers report, acknowledged that violence has risen in recent weeks. He says civilian deaths remain very low compared to what was going on last year, but statistics kept by McClatchy newspaper show that in Baghdad alone, more than 200 people have been killed in attacks so far this month, compared with 90, I guess this month means April, since compared with 99 in March and 46 in February. The last time McClatchy recorded more than 200 civilian deaths in a month was more than a year ago in March 2008. Hillary Clinton said during a visit to Baghdad that the spike in attacks is not an indication that Iraq is regressing. I didn't realize Iraq was on the Nile. They say that she and Army General Raymond Odierno, the top commander there, agree the uptick in bombing shouldn't change American plans for withdrawal. Outside analysts aren't so optimistic. Michael O'Hanlon at the Brookings Institution calls the rise in violence significant. He speculated, is what he did, that anger among Sunni Muslim militiamen may be partly to blame for the rise in attacks. Relations between the militia's members and Iraq's Shiite-led government are at an all-time low. This will push us back towards sectarian violence, says the former mayor of Sadr City. The Shiites will be looking for revenge. Just a can kick down the road till now. And finally, news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, also from McClatchy newspapers. It may be raining. Sky may not be falling. It may be raining in Pakistan. But the good news is, according to McClatchy newspapers, Pakistan is expanding its nuclear weapons program, even as Islamic extremists advance in the direction of several highly sensitive nuclear-related sites. U.S. officials and other experts say Pakistan's government is completing two new nuclear reactors to produce plutonium, just plutonium, for weapons that would be smaller, lighter, and more efficient than the 60-odd highly enriched uranium-fueled warheads Pakistan now possesses. In the current climate, with Pakistan's leadership under duress from daily acts of violence by insurgent Taliban forces and organized opposition, the security of any nuclear material produced in these reactors is in question, says an April 23 report by the Institute for Science and International Security. Officials and experts are more worried that Islamic radicals or sympathizers inside Pakistan's military, repeat, inside the military, also inside the intelligence service, might get their hands on radioactive material that could be used to make a crude dirty bomb, then they are concerned about a theft of one of the heavily guarded weapons themselves. The two new reactors are being built in the heartland of Punjab province's northern border with the restive northwest frontier province, much of which is already under Taliban control. One reactor is all but complete. Clearly we have a rising threat level, says a U.S. defense official who requested anonymity. I don't think it's likely that the jihadists will make a mad dash tomorrow to seize a nuclear site, but in the course of time, I see a rising threat. Pakistan's military does maintain a 10,000-strong force whose job is supposedly to guard the nuclear facilities. Now it's taking extraordinary steps to protect its nuclear sites as well as the warheads themselves. The Pakistani army recognizes the hazards of those weapons falling into the wrong hands. We have strong military-to-military cooperation, said President Obama. The aircraft and missile-launched weapons are kept unassembled with their nuclear cores stored separately from their conventional explosive triggers. They're also fitted with highly classified U.S.-designed security devices that require two people to enter codes. Gee, that would mean you'd have to have a very small conspiracy. The senior U.S. defense official declined to discuss how the United States would react if militants seized a Pakistani nuclear facility. He added, "We have to have a strategy to deal with that. You can be certain that kind of planning is ongoing." Secretary of State Clinton, less sanguine, says the insurgency now poses, quote, "a mortal threat to the United States and the world." Yeah. Some U.S. officials and experts noting that security has been problematic even at some U.S. nuclear facilities, let's build more of those ourselves, say they doubted the Pakistan system is foolproof. Continued instability in the country could impact these safeguards, says the Congressional Research Service, using the word impact as a verb, which I've been told not to do. The fear that jihadists might obtain radioactive material for a dirty bomb is heightened by concern about a potential insider threat amid intelligence reports of strong Islamic and anti-American sentiment within the Pakistani officer corps. There is a rising tide of jihadist sympathizers within the Pakistani military, says a U.S. defense official. Lucky we concentrated on Iraq for 7 years. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Relax. It's Sunday. Now to torture. No, I'm not going to torture you. Now to the subject of torture. President Obama, at his first primetime news conference this week, which was beaten by a Fox program called Lie to Me. You figure it out. President Obama was asked about the release of the torture memos and about what should be done with the people who authorized this stuff. And here was his summary statement on the subject.
This is a decision that I am very comfortable with, and I think the American people over time will recognize that it is better for us to stick to who we are, even when we're taking on a unscrupulous enemy. I believe that waterboarding was torture, and I think that whatever legal rationales were used, it was a mistake.
So I believe waterboarding is torture, and the second half of that is the legal rationales. It was a mistake. On first hearing, it sounds like there's a mismatch between the first and the second halves of that sentence. But then I did some research and found some other statements that President Obama has made on related matters in the recent past.
I think in the case of the 11 nurses were gunned down in the space of a few hours, that was clearly mass murder. and it just was not a good idea. In the case of the man who has now admitted to defrauding the federal government out of several billions of dollars in assets, this is fraud and a financial crime of a very serious order, and we wish it hadn't happened. The mother who killed and then dumped the body of her 3-month-old daughter in the river was disturbed, but she was guilty of a heinous act, and it's not the kind of thing we expect. The driver who plowed into 14 college students innocently standing on a street corner last Friday night was guilty of wanton hit-and-run driving, and I would not want to be a passenger in his vehicle.
Well, at least he's consistent.
I'm going to Brownsville, take that right-hand road. Well, I'm going to Brownsville, take that right-hand road. And I ain't gonna stop walking till I get in sweet mama's
This is Liz Show, and now, the apologies of the week from a weapons-free facility.
We're so sorry.
Dateline, Jefferson City, Missouri. He hasn't been officially censured, but Representative Rob Schaff, Republican of St. Joseph, Missouri, is sorry. On the House floor this week, he apologized for comparing Medicaid coverage for children to slavery. I wasn't talking about slavery of African Americans, a dark chapter in our history. There he goes again, he said. I was talking about the economic slavery of the taxpayers. The president of the Ultimate Fighting Championship thing, Dana White, has released a YouTube video apologizing for a profanity-laced tirade he issued against veteran sports reporter Loretta Hunt of SureDog.com. The Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation called for White to apologize after he used an anti-gay slur in his rant. The last thing I would ever want anyone to think of me is to attack someone because of their sexual orientation, said White. I apologize for anyone I've offended or hurt. That's right. The head of Ultimate Fighting apologizes for hurting. Well, you know, not physical hurt. Dateline Pittsburgh, Mayor Luke Ravenstahl apologized this week to voters who found one of his television campaign ads to be misleading about his record. Really? Ravenstahl's ad claims he made difficult financial decisions when he eliminated the gross receipts tax and reduced the parking tax. Actually, the state required the city to cut those taxes as part of the 5-year financial recovery plan. If that in some way was misleading, I apologize, Ravenstahl said. It's clearly in the recovery plan, but it's something that we work with the state to achieve. Ravenstahl voted against the recovery plan when he was a city council member. Dateline Seoul, former South Korean President Roh Moo-hyun apologized this week for his connection to a corruption probe, saying he felt ashamed and sorry for disappointing his fellow citizens. He made his remarks at his home before leaving for the Capitol to meet with prosecutors. He is the nation's third former president to be summoned. The former other two were convicted in 1995 of receiving bribes and inciting a mutiny. They were sentenced to death but received pardons. Roh, who ended his term in office in February 2008, has not been formally charged. Investigators have linked him to an alleged $5 million bribery scandal involving a businessman and longtime supporter arrested last year on graft charges. But he's sorry. Dateline Mexico City. Oh, I'll wear a mask to read this one. No, can't do that. Chivas Guadalajara defender, I guess that's soccer, Hector Reynoso apologized this week for coughing and making other gestures in an opponent's face, pretending he wanted to spread swine flu. The Mexican defender coughed several times in the face of Everton's Sebastian Penco in a match on Wednesday. I've cooled off now, but at the time I reacted, and perhaps it wasn't an appropriate thing that I was doing. I offer my apology to the club and player. I know I'm going to be punished. Gee, says that almost as if he's looking forward to it. Speaking of apologies having to do with the epidemic or the pandemic or the whatever, a company called Guerrilla Media came out with a plan to place advertising on the face masks. Saying it would be a good form of brand ambassadorship. And then there's this. Dear client, I would like to apologize for the insensitive email some of you might have received. In hindsight, the concept, putting ads on face masks, was not as clever as I'd originally thought. I did not intend for it to make light of the recent swine flu outbreak and regret any anguish we caused you. I want to take personal responsibility for this stunt and let you know that the fine staff of Go Guerrilla Media had absolutely nothing to do with this. If you'd like to discuss this with me further, I can be reached at my phone. Sincerely, Alan Whelan of Go Guerrilla Media. So two swine flu apologies in the first week of the thing. There will be more. The White House says it's sorry if Vice President Biden's remarks on air travel caused any alarm. This will be the third swine flu-related apology of the week. That's good work, boys and girls. Biden annoyed the travel industry when he told the Today Show that he would advise family members not to go anywhere in a confined place. His comments drew accusations of fear-mongering. White House spokesman Robert Gibbs said what Biden simply meant to say was what other administration officials have said. If you feel sick, don't get on a plane. Obviously, if anybody was unduly alarmed for whatever reason, we would apologize for that, Gibbs added. British airline BMI, formerly British Midland, apologized this week for deleting Israel for an electronic map that appears on its flights. BMI's London, Tel Aviv flights, Israel, and most of its cities weren't marked in order to avoid angering Muslim passengers. Only Haifa was identified by its Arab name, Haifa. In its apology, BMI said the plane bearing the map was acquired from a now-defunct airline that flew to several Arab countries in the Middle East, and the map highlighted locations including the Muslim holy city of Mecca. BMI says the airline asked for the map to be removed once it took over the planes, but there had been a technical mistake. The airline will provide new maps, and BMI will use different aircraft in the meantime for its twice-daily flights to Israel. BMI said it was making every effort not to hurt passengers' feelings by adopting a non-political position. Guess you can't fly to Israel and Arab countries, both. A Las Vegas man who tried to carry a pipe bomb on board a plane at Long Island MacArthur Airport last year pleaded guilty to a charge of manufacturing a pipe bomb. Stephen Nobles apologized for his actions at the U.S. District Court in Central Islip. His lawyer said his client had intended to use the device only for a 4th of July celebration in Las Vegas and had used extremely bad judgment in attempting to bring it on the plane on his way home. It is not clear if the bomb could have detonated accidentally. Pipe bombs brought to Vegas should stay in Vegas, babe. Apple Computer has apologized for allowing the highly controversial Baby Shaker game to be sold in the App Store. The company behind the application, Sakalosoft, also reportedly apologized in a note on their website. Apple apologized swiftly and unreservedly. In a statement, Apple said this application was deeply offensive. Name of the application again, Baby Shaker, and should not have been approved for distribution in the App Store. We sincerely apologize for this mistake and thank our customers for bringing this to our attention. The application drew widespread condemnation, with children's protection groups and shaken baby charities in particular expressing outrage at what was seen as an incredibly bad taste game, which could encourage impressionable customers to shake babies. The game required users to shake their iPhone to dissuade a virtual baby from crying. The Baby Hitter game is... No, it's not. Of course not. Major League Baseball Network analyst Matt Vasgersian, apologized for an ill-advised joke he had made previous evening. The incident occurred when Colorado Rockies outfielder Brad Hoppe was injured and pulled from the field in a neck brace. In an attempt to make light of the somber moment, Vasgersian joked that one of the EMTs in the field looked exactly like Donovan McNabb. Don't know what the meaning of that joke is. The joke turned what was a serious and solemn moment into a very awkward moment as Vasgersian's fellow analysts chided him on the air. Now he comes up with an apology the next night. Quote, I am an idiot. Save the racial stuff, which is just flat out wrong. Almost all of what has been posted on my regrettably horrific timing is spot on. It was a bad decision made on live TV, and I can absolutely understand how that can make an announcer sound insensitive. Bad on-the-spot judgment. Nobody feels worse about it than I do. Guys. The Pope has apologized. Pope Benedict the 16th expressed sorrow to Canada's Aboriginal peoples for anguish suffered under the country's residential schools program. The Pope offered his sympathy and prayerful solidarity, emphasized that acts of abuse cannot be tolerated in society. This followed a 20-minute meeting with 24 Aboriginal leaders. And finally, no, not finally, two more. Captain Jenks, one of Howard Stern's sidekicks, has been arrested for deceiving bar owners out of performance cash. Jenks, a.k.a. Thomas Cipriano, is in jail for pocketing $350 in advances, $350, ladies and gentlemen, for advances from bar owners and then never showing up for his comedy gigs. Guess he doesn't need the $350. Cipriano, who bills himself as the Howard Stern Show's king of phony phone calls, was arrested on $2,500 bail. He canceled his planned 2009 tour because of medical and personal issues. Cipriano apologized to fans and nightclubs, saying he plans to reschedule shows or refund deposit money. He received the show appearances in part by telling the bar owners he would promote the bars on Howard Stern's radio show, Not Heard in Your Area. No, it's heard on satellite, I'm sure, somewhere. And finally, Dateline Paducah, Kentucky, one of the five U.S. soldiers who helped rape an Iraqi girl and kill her family, told jurors this week that he regrets what happened that day in March 2006. I should have had more sense than that, James Barker testified. calling the crimes barbaric and saying his actions that day went against how he was raised. You weren't raised to kill and rape? Okay, then. He's now serving a 90-year term in a military prison. He was testifying at the civil trial of the atrocities' alleged ringleader. Specialist Stephen Dale Green being tried in federal court in Kentucky because he was discharged from the Army due to a personality disorder before his involvement in the crime came to light. Recruitment trouble, ladies and gentlemen. That's the only thing you can say there. The apology of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So Chrysler is in bankruptcy, Chrysler Corporation. I'm amused by the conservatives who mocked President Obama. Obama at his press conference this week said, you know, I really didn't want to expand the federal government's role in the private industrial sector. And conservatives sort of mocked him for that. And you just have to say, do you think that anybody really thought as they were coming up, when I grow up, I want to be president of the United States so I can take over two bankrupt car companies? I don't. Anyway, so General Motors is reportedly heading for bankruptcy, possibly as early as June 1st. They announced this week they were shutting down Pontiac. Well, they're shutting down all their manufacturing plants for a little while to let inventory kind of leak out. They're shutting down Pontiac. There will be no more Pontiacs. There'll be no more. They're trying to sell off Hummer. Yeah, I'm going to invest in that. That looks like a growth thing. And they're also trying to shed Saab. By the way, does it tell you anything about the state of industrial capitalism circa 2009? That even before things started going really bad, the preferred term in business and business reporting when companies were laying off employees was that they had, quote, shed jobs. You know, like an animal sheds excess fur. Just some jobs. Anyway, GM is in the midst of all that. It's clear that whatever else happens, the future holds in store a smaller GM.
Well, you used to rule the streets and the track like a fuel-burning giant. You fought hard so your engines wouldn't be pollution compliant. You and your brother cars prospered by being defiant. And you had such good fun till Obama took the company away.
Such good fun till Obama
little GT
away.
You're looking at a crappier summer.
Crappier summer.
You're closing down Pontiac, looking hard to dump your Hummer. Bankruptcy fights, being owned by the feds is a bummer. And you had such big fun till Obama took the company away.
Little
GM.
Survive.
The clouds hang low and the rains do fall, and everybody sings a little blues after all. But our love rolls on. The skies grow dark and the winds do blow, and counting on tomorrow is at best touch and go. But our love rolls on. Our love rolls on. You and I have a reason to try. We'll make it over the hill. We survive and our love. And it always will. So it's rain or shine, as the fates decide. And even if some trouble comes along for the ride, still our love rolls on. Our love rolls on.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. On the mighty 104 in Berlin, Ich bin ein 104er. Around the world through the internet, via your computer at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available on your iPhone through Sketcher.com. No, Stitcher.com. Pardon me, Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R. Available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/show. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like being able to bring a weapon into this facility if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks, and to Eric Bright at KERA Dallas, one of the many stations that doesn't carry this broadcast, but which made today's program possible. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music broadcast hereon is always available at the frequently evolving harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.